You're listening to Root Cause Remedies, a podcast that explores environmental justice from right here in Hawaii. I'm Lala Ness, your guest host and fellow traveler on this Huaka'i, to learn more about the issues that affect the lands, waters, humans, and more than humans that sustain us. If you've been listening to the news or following social media the past month, you know water has been on everybody's mind recently. Every day there is more happening at Kapukahi, aka Red Hill. The wave of activism and organizing has been inspiring to witness. Everyday people are recognizing just how precious our water supply is on our islands, as well as how vulnerable it is to external forces like fuel storage tanks. When I recorded this episode with Noelani, the Board of Water Supply had just made the announcement to shut down the Halawa shaft. At the same time, we had historic rainfall in December with major impacts to the coast, exacerbating already eroded areas. Just a sobering reminder to us all that climate crisis is here, and we all have a role in protecting the place we call home. So I love that our first episode is with Professor Noelani Punivai, whose work as an academic, conservation scientist, Native Hawaiian community member, science educator, and a mother is dedicated to ensuring the health and well-being of Aina and Vai. She does this through storytelling to help people meaningfully connect and awaken to place and how their ecosystems work around them. For her, building that relationship to the elements as a kua, like our kupuna did, is how we can not only appreciate them, but have a reciprocal relationship to them, protect and defend them. Because we are building our future every day, and as Noi says, it's not about having a goal for sustainability or conservation, but moving towards aina momona, abundant land, a future where we thrive. Throughout our conversation, she weaves her personal story as a Big Island girl with her journey from traditional science to science rooted in ancestral Hawaiian knowledge, cultural geography, and facilitating deeper understandings of Malama Aina for her students. Her methodologies are what can be known as pono science, the foundational wisdom of our kupuna, and offers ways to build our understanding through daily practices of aloha aina. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode. Mahalo, Noelani, again for joining us today, this season, talking about Vai and by Vai and what does that mean to us here in Hawaii. And I do want to ground in the present emerging issues related to water that we're real life experiencing right now. Everything is connected. So just want to bring it into the space as kind of a time marker for us actually contextualizing Vai, both from a cultural and historical space, but present day experience as well. And what we just experienced with the weather and what we are experiencing, the heavy rains and storms and floods that's currently sweeping across Paiaina, the island chain, causing, you know, roadways and major transit locations to be closed. There's erosion and runoff into the oceans, power outages people are feeling in areas like from Volcano to downtown Honolulu. Shelters have been opened, so kind of that framework of water we've been experiencing and are experiencing. And then the other one is Red Hill and the fuel leak that is causing Honolulu's Board of Water to shut down its Halawa shaft this past week, which is Honolulu's largest water source on Oahu. This has been due to contamination of drinking water sourced from the Navy's well near Pearl Harbor. And today being Pearl Harbor Day, which marks the 80th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, which is just want to contextualize for our conversation. With that, I'll open up with what waters do you come from?
I love that question just because being here in Hawaii, people have a different understanding of Vai to everyone. Everyone almost always assumes that you're connected to the kai, to the ocean. And I do a lot of my work in the kai, as I'll talk about. But it's actually interesting that Vai is actually who I am. My name is Noelani Punivai, And everything about that name talks about fresh water. So my first name talks about the misty rain of where I was conceived up in Volcano, up in the Mauka of Puna. And my last name, Punivai, is a name that can be described as meaning all about water, encircling fresh waters, everything that has to do with Vai. And so that kind of kuleana was almost given to me, not on purpose, but it's something that you live through and you learn how to connect through time. And so being all about water, I have definitely been connected to fresh waters from the very beginning. I was raised most of my life living in the Moku of Puna, from the Kai side of Puna to Mauka Puna. And I also, my grandparents live in Kaumana, and my Portuguese grandparents were raised on the banks of the Wailuku River. So I actually grew up swimming probably more in the Wailuku River than in the ocean as a child. And then after that, moving out to Kapoho, where they had a beach house, and swimming in that brackish water. So it's always interesting how my connections are through Vai all the time. And I have a funny story to go along with that. I was raised on catchment water in Pune, and I love fresh water. I love Vai, as I said. And then when I moved away to grad school on the mainland, I actually started having an allergic reaction, and I was always had hives. Anywhere something was tight on me, I'd have. And so I went to see the doctor. You know, I was young and I've never had allergies to anything before. And the doctor did all the tests, and he's like, you're probably just allergic to the water here. And I was just like, what do you mean? Like, I've never heard, you can't be allergic to water. And he's like, well, it's not the water, but it's the chemicals, the nutrients, the minerals, the natural minerals that are from groundwater here in the mainland, which is something I was never exposed to because I was raised completely on rainwater. And our rainwater in Hawaii is so pure, doesn't have much. It might have a little sulfur, a little pele in it, but it doesn't have the same minerals that continental water has. So I would go out on a boat, and I did a lot of boat work in my graduate, and I wasn't allergic to the water on the boat because it was processed different. So I was just so amazed that as close as I feel to Vai, my body actually does understand the Vai that flows through it and where it comes from. And I know that here that I'm back in Pune again, you know, I love my Vai. I drink it every day. I still live off of catchment water, and my Vai comes from the heavens. It comes from the Leni. It flows down from the maunas. We in Pune don't really have rivers, but right now when we have storms, we have a beautiful river, Waikahekahenui, that flows through Pune, and it only does so when it storms. But I've always taken my kids there to see their Vai, to see their river that flows, and to see that change from knowing that Pune has no rivers to say, well, it actually kind of does. It's just not a permanent river source. So we love swimming in that river, and I call my kids my little o'opus as I take them to swim along the roadsides in the forest of Pune to feel their waters.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It reminds me growing up Waikeuka, when we would have the big rains, it would flood up here and we would go pasture surfing.
Yep. Take the boogie boards in the grass.
Yeah. Growing up country, growing up, you know, raising animals up here next to the forest reserve, we would, during big heavy rains, we'd bust out the boogie boards at Mauka. It reminds me of that, and just that joy in relationship to water. And so beautiful to see, hearing, I can hear your Keiki laughing in the water right now.
I was teaching class last night and my kids came home and I was like, I was just wondering, why are they all wet? Like, I know they're not playing in the rain, they're teenagers. And then I heard later that they went swimming up the river, and I was like, it brought joy to my heart to know that my kids are teenagers. And yet to go swimming in the forest at 5 o'clock was just something they still wanted to do. And that connection to Vai, like I said, you just have that pilina and I know it's going to stay with them.
Going into a little bit more of your mo'olelo or your moku hauhau, your story, telling a little bit about your professional background and your life's work, but I think more so maybe starting at your practice with relationship to place.
I love telling my story just because I feel like you never know the life that you live, and you hope everyone finds a path that they enjoy. And I am just so blessed as I see the students around me growing up and just realizing all the opportunities I was given as a child. So my mom and dad were both raised in Hilo. My mom's an educator. She taught early childhood. And my dad actually worked for the USGS Geological Survey. So he studied earthquakes and seismic movement for 20 years as a child. So I was able to kind of grow up on the banks of Halema'uma'u and all of Kilauea and Mauna Loa as he set up these seismic stations around. And so I just was so excited that I got to just explore Hawaii Island as a child. all through my family, being raised here in Hilo and just doing all the outdoor stuff that you do as a kid here on Hawaii Island, but also that through my dad's work, we got to explore some really interesting and amazing places. Our family was always very busy. I'm one of four daughters. And so my parents always kept us in things. So we all paddled from a really young age, spent a lot of time in Hilo Bay, in Radio Bay, learning along this coastline. And then, yeah, I did start hula at a pretty young age as well in Halau Ke Kuhi. So being raised in the Halau, most people think you're just a hula dancer and you learn about your, you know, how to move and how to dance. But our Halau was going through a lot of transitions at the time, and we were really connected to place, and we were telling stories of Pele, of Kamehameha. And as we told the stories through hula about these mo'olelos, we also experienced them. So we did a lot of huaka'i through hula. We went to these places. We danced at these places. We had to make our leis and our ahus, our garments from the foliage, right? So we had to learn how to gather all different kinds of materials, not just leis for flowers, but hala for skirts, things to dye our pa'us with. And so hula gave me that connection to the environment, where I learned not just how Hawaiians interacted in those spaces and the protocols associated with it, but how to use them, how you value them, and the stories and the mo'olelos around them. And so as I explored with through my family these spaces and through hula, I just learned from a young age to connect our culture with the natural environment that surrounded us, and to see how personally related we could be to these places. And to see these places through time. So I experienced them, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And then now I take my students and my children to these same spaces, and I can see how they've changed through time. And you just have that pilina to know how healthy they are and how they're going to grow or not. And so I think for me, I was just so lucky that I grew up with this love of the environment that surrounded me. And I wanted that love. But through that love, I also knew how much it was hurting. You know, I'm a child of the 80s, like I said, and all we heard about then was global warming. It wasn't climate change at that point. It was global warming, was overpopulation, was deforestation. We're losing the rainforest, save the rainforest, save the whales. You know, it was a very different sort of conservation theme that was going on. I didn't know how to connect it to me and my people, but I knew I wanted a safe Hawaii. I didn't want it to be any more unhealthy. Invasive species were already a thing, mostly with vivie, toads. You know, we had small things back then. I don't think we understood how big the invasive species problem was going to be in our forest. But all those little things started. And that's what really made me go into the science fields. It's because I knew I wanted to understand my home, how it worked, and protect it and be part of the solution to making sure it was going to be healthy and abundant in the future.
You just shared a beautiful kind of weaving of your lived experience and knowledge through family and through culture, and then you kind of getting into the profession of the natural world, of the natural sciences. Can you share a little bit of how one influences the other, or how you navigate weaving those together, simultaneity of cultural knowledge and lived experience in Ike and Western science, and utilizing both of those in the work you do?
It took me a long time to come around to understand that that's what I'm really passionate about. I think, like you said, I came to science because I wanted to really save Hawaii and ensure that it was abundant and healthy, that our oceans, you know, we had fisheries in them. My cultural experiences were really in a different headspace, I think, for me. You know, that was my lived experiences. I danced about our forest. I learned about the different akua, the different phenomena and energies that represent our environment. And it wasn't until I started working on my PhD and finishing my PhD that I started connecting the two and just understanding that the solution I was looking for in how do we make Hawaii abundant again and how do we make our forests healthy again was in recognizing our Hawaiian cultural knowledge about these spaces. And knowing that if we understand Pele as an akua and understand the force that she brings, that's an easy way for people to understand that Pele isn't just a fictional person that is related to the lava and the crater. And it's not her doing these things as a person doing things to making the land do something, but as she is the lava as Pele the Akua is the flowing lava, it's the erupting lava, it's the dried lava. These lava landscapes is Pele in all her different forms. And in science, we talk about the same thing. That's basalt lava, or, you know, it comes from this volcanics, and we talk about it in scientific terminology that sometimes is hard for people to understand. And so then they don't like science. But when you talk about it as being Pele, as Pele came out of the ground, she erupted, she flowed. Some of her personalities are explosive. Some are fast, some are slow. This is the way she cooled. Then you make it a personal story. And that's how I want people to understand the akuas that we have in Hawaii, is that they represent our landscapes. They represent all the different environmental processes that happen around us. We gave them names, just as scientists give some names. But for us, they seem like personal names. And that personal names lets us recognize their behaviors, their functions, their processes, their interactions with others. But it makes it seem almost more personable, so that you know that you can have a relationship to these and to your environment. And not thinking that we are Kanaka, we are humans above the rest of the environment, but we are Kanaka. She is a Pele. He is an ocean. He is a mountain. All these things are just as animated and have just as much energy as we have. And we control that relationships between them. When I look at the rain falling and I understand that as a process of kane, it can tell you more about the water cycle. So kane, a lot of people know that he is the sun. He is the energies that come from the sun. He's also represented by fresh water. And you might think that those are really opposite things. But here in Hawaii, we know that all our fresh water comes from the water cycle that starts with the sun. So the sun heats up the ocean, causes an evapotranspiration, and brings fresh water to Hawaii. And that is all kane. That whole process is kane. And so the water cycle we know is kane i ka waiola. And kane's water cycle is understood through different olis that are written about him, different chants, different stories about how he came. And then you hear about his partner in all his travels and journeys, who is Kanaloa. And Kanaloa is known as the god of ocean water. And then when you hear these, you can understand how related freshwater and ocean water is in all of Hawaii, and how they go about bringing forth the springs that were used to feed all our lo'is, that were used for drinking water. And then you think, well, why does Kanaloa have to be there? And we know that Kanaloa, some people only see him as ocean water, but his other big energy and process he's related to is contained water. And so contained water, as in a body of water, such as that is found beneath our islands. And so fresh water, the basal lens, the aquifer, the Moana Liha, these are the trapped waters beneath our islands. And that is Kanaloa water, just as the ocean is a contained water basin. And that's why it's Kanaloa water. And so when kane goes with Kanaloa, he brings forth that Kanaloa water into spring water. And so that's why you need Kanaloa and kane together, because it's kane tapping into the Kanaloa water to bring us springs. And so these stories that you hear about, and the more, I wasn't trained in cultural studies. You don't really go to school to learn all the mo'olelos and stories about your culture. But as I learned more about it, I realized that was the way that I wanted to connect the processes and things that were happening in Hawaii to the public, to my students. That's how I wanted to understand science. Because learning, you know, complex terminology that you're never going to use in everyday language doesn't allow people to connect to those resources. So I can tell people about the water cycle through using scientific terminology. But if I tell them that same water cycle through a story, it's something that they're going to remember. It's something that they're going to have a little bit more connection to. And that is human nature. Humans have always told stories. Every culture is a storytelling culture. We all sing songs, because that's the way we keep our knowledge and we continue to tell people what our values are and what's important to our people. So once I started understanding my culture and really just that aha moment of, this is how I want to talk about the processes that happen on my island. And this is the way that we get people to understand what's really important and how our environment works and how to save it, is through the stories and knowing who these different akua are and the processes that they represent. And then you know also what's important to Hawaii's culture, because it's in these stories that commemorate what's important to understand about the environment. And so I've just had an amazing experience now, like taking the scientific knowledge and content that I've learned over time in all of my schooling and translating it to help me understand my akua better. Because how do you understand Pele if you're not there to witness her in all of her different stages? You know, how can you really understand the water cycle if you're not present through all those different stages? And so you need to have both. We're not blessed to have been raised in the environment with that observational skills that our ancestors did. We are cut off from it. I live in a 4-box hale with a roof on my head. I'm not feeling the same elements that my kupuna did. And so I had to learn, I think, a lot of it through the science method to really understand the important cycles that happen. But now that I have that, when I read the stories, when I learn about the Akua, I just understand better what they represent and the different names and what the cycles and those specific mo'olelos and olis are telling us about, because I've experienced them or I've learned about it through science. And so there's so much that learning about our environment that we can do from multiple different ways of knowing and learning. And there's different ways to learn about how our environment works and how our water flows from these different sources.
I'm getting curious as you're sharing about what does that look like in your practice and your work now as an educator, as a practitioner, as a Kanaka Maoli woman, and specifically to the work around, you know, you talked a little bit about that nexus or the convergence between Ike Kupuna or Indigenous knowledge and Western science, and specifically how it's had you be able to use a lens specific to water on these cycles, right? And the modern day challenge of how do we relate to our elements in that way in this contemporary modern world, where we're sitting in boxes and don't have as much connection and relationship, say, to the natural elements. But in your work, what are ways that you're being able to practice that and expose the next generation to this type of practice and how it's relevant to the realities of today, I guess, whether we're talking about climate change or economic crises, health issues. Maybe I'll stop there and just let you riff.
It does take my mind in multiple places. What really brought it home to me was a saying from a scientist saying that no matter what data he shares and finds and researches, that's not going to change someone's perception. But if he is able to connect to that person's emotions, that is what's going to change people's behaviors. And so when we talk about aloha aina, when we talk about how we love our land or how we treat the vai, the mauna as our ancestors, what does that mean? How do you really understand that concept? And I think a lot of people, they hear it and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, okay, Hawaiians say they're related to the stars and the animals that came before them and the landscapes. And so I try to really tell people what it can mean to you. And I compare it to the love of a grandmother. So as we say, like Mauna Wakea is our grandfather. And so how would you treat your grandfather? You know, what are those actions that you would do to them? When you think of the forest around you, when you think of Vai, you have to act like that is your grandmother. And how would you treat them? Would you do different things to her? Would you pollute her? Would you overtax her? Would you ask her for more than she can give you? And the answer is, if you love your grandmother, no, you wouldn't do those things. But if you see that same Vai as a person you don't know, if you see that same forest as someone you don't have a personal relationship to, it's a lot easier to do these actions that don't lead to abundance, that don't lead to health. Similarly, you know, when your grandmother is sick, you're going to do everything you can to help her. You're going to make sure she's getting her medicine. You're going to make sure she has dinner. You're going to do her yard work so she doesn't have to do it herself. Those are all things that you do for your grandmother because you love her, because she's related to you, because that you have that kuleana to her. And that's how I think about our aina. When we think of our aina as our grandmother, then we're going to do everything we can to ensure she's healthy and safe and clean. And it's that relationship that's going to save Hawaii. If you think of your aina as a stranger that you've never met before, just as you would meet a homeless person on the side of the road, you have empathy for that homeless person and you wish them well. But do you actually take actions to make their life better? Do you take actions to make them healthy? And the answer is probably no. And my daughter was actually the first one to really share that with me as a young age. She just had this empathy for homeless people and she felt so bad for them. And I was like, why does she have that empathy and I don't? And I think it's because we start to lose our relationships. We start to have boundaries and protect ourselves as we grow older. You know, we don't give all our aloha the same way a child does to everyone they meet. And that is what's causing our environmental problems today is that some people are deeply connected to the landscapes and they see their kuleana to take care of them. They see that their relationship is built on the health of the lo'i that surrounds them, the fish pond that's in front of them, their forest that's there. And they treat that place as it is family. And we say that all the time in Hawaii and in Hawaiian language. And we talk about these words like aloha aina and ohana, but until you live it, until you see the forest and the river as a living relative of yours, that you have the kuleana to take care of, will you take those necessary steps to ensure its health? And that to me is why I love teaching in Hawaiian studies at Kamakaku, not just the ike that our kupuna had and that our ancestors shared with us and the amazing knowledge they had about the landscape, you know, knowing every wind, knowing every rain, knowing how different water moved on their landscapes. But it was the pilina, the relationship they had with those spaces that ensured its abundance, that they did kilo, they observed it. They didn't just see it though, but they acted on it, you know, and they created that that love for it that allowed it to thrive. And that's something that we can still do today. And that's something why, not that I have left science, but I've left the science practice of observing something, being objective about it, gathering data for it in the hopes that someone will take an action because of the data that I've produced. Now my data is in love. I work in the landscape of aloha aina, where I love my people and my places. And if I can get all of my students and all the children that I interact with to love their aina the way that I do and the way that our kupuna does, then that is how Hawaii is gonna thrive. And the Hawaii's aina includes the people. It is not political autonomy, but political dependence on the aina that serves you. It's the fact that our people, our lahui, our kaiaulu, our people and our forest people, our water people, you know, our maunas, everything will be in abundance together. And that to me, what an aina mamona is, a healthy island community. I mean, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for conservation. I don't have sustainability goals for myself and my family. I have an abundance goal. I have an aina mamona goal where I know the place that I live in is feeding me, is healthy. It has native peoples, if those are ohia trees, if those might be hapu'us, you know, all those native peoples are living on the landscape just as my human peoples are. So my journey has been really, you know, very circular, always going down different rivers and different vais, but I love the way it's come around. And I feel like our whole lahui, all of our people are living in the spaces now that the movement for Mauna Kea and the stopping of further development on it is really showing people what it means to kia'i, to steward a place, to have a palina to a mauna. And I hope more people explore that concept of we love Mauna Kea. And what it means to love the mauna is to make sure that it's healthy going forward. And if we can all find a place to love and adopt and just continue to share that love and have that kuleana for that place, I mean, that's exactly how Hawaii is going to thrive going forward. That's exactly how our people are going to be healthy and our waters are going to be clean, is because everybody cares that our waters are clean. Our riverways don't need to be polluted. And this goes for the urban environment as well, right? A lot of people care about the Alawai plan and how they are trying to ensure that as our climate changes, as our sea level water rise, as we have increased storms and heavy rainfall events like we're experiencing now, how are our landscapes going to adapt? And it's very important that our people in urban Honolulu and in all our valleys in Honolulu and even in, you know, residential places and other neighborhoods, we all understand these things and care about it just as closely as somebody who lives in a rural environment in a large open area. If we all care for our places just as much, we'll start growing food. We'll start harvesting from the trees that actually do have food. We'll start making sure our rivers are clean and we'll understand how much impact we're having on our water resources. You mentioned before the pollution that's happening in our groundwater resources. And that is something that, you know, urban residents need to understand is where their water comes from. They turn on a tap and it flows and it's different. You know, in my kids, we know where our water comes from. It comes off of our roof. It comes from the rain and it falls in our water catchment tank. And we need to clean that catchment tank. So we see how dirty it gets every couple of years. And we understand the process that goes into ensuring we have water and how much we use. But every person can do that in your hale. You can start understanding the water cycle and the reservoirs behind you and understand how the government, how the Board of Water Supply, how the water resources management happens to those areas. And it's sad that it takes really bad environmental impacts for people to start understanding those processes. But hopefully all that they're learning through it, knowing that the Ko'olau mountain range provides, you know, 2/3 of Oahu's drinking water and the aquifers that are filled from the rains that fall on the Ko'olau's is what goes through, you know, all the plumbing underneath your house or your apartment, and it flows in your tap. And then how all that water is mixed, right? So it's not that all the water in one pump is going to your house. As we saw, 20% of the Halawa aquifer goes from Honolulu to Hawaii Kai. So all the water that you're drinking is mixed from different sources. And those aquifers that we pull through, it's a very intricate system that exists, and understanding all the rocks and the way water moves through our islands is so fascinating. And I would love taking students to see that. You can actually walk under the mauna and see the rain falling on your head if you go through the dike system. You can see the shafts that they're talking about. I'm not sure what you guys think of when you hear, oh, the Halawa shaft versus the Navy shaft of water, you know, is shut off. But these shafts are huge. There's actually like a little train that goes in the mountain down to the aquifer. The shaft is large enough for grown men to walk in. They dynamited these back, as you said, around the Pearl Harbor, around the war times, so that we had access to water. But these large shafts actually are tunnels through the volcano so that we can actually see the water below us. And we can see the aquifer and how it's being depleted. There's been lots of studies coming out recently showing that our current usage of water on Oahu is exceeding the amount of water that's being recharged to these aquifers under the water. And it's been shown over the decades. And even though we have really good water management protocols in place, because they were set up during the nation of Hawaii, our people understood how water was important and they had a whole board set up just to manage water. And so luckily, we still have that structure in place today, which is very different than areas on the continental mainland. But Hawaii has the ability to manage our water resources. And we're learning the different science to understand how much water we can take out of it. But just as one visual, so the water that's underneath the island that we're pumping out to drink, to do all the water, drinking water sources that we need, that raindrop that you're drinking today when you brush your teeth or you wash your clothes, fell on the Ko'olau's over 25 years ago. And it took over 25 years ago for that raindrop to go into the aquifer underneath the Ko'olau Mountain. And then for the Board of Water Supply to turn on a pump and pump it out to you. And so the water that you're drinking is a kupuna. It is an ancestor. And 25 is probably one of the youngest waters. And it depends. You know, again, every aquifer is a little different on how fast the water gets recharged, where the pump is, so how accessible that water is. So in some places, your water can be over hundreds of years old. On Hawaii Island, that's definitely the case. I had a student who was working on her master's at UH Hilo, and she sampled the freshwater springs coming out of Keokaha. And using an isotopic analysis, she was able to age that water and then also see at what elevation that raindrop fell on Hawaii Island. So she could see that the rain that was falling on Mauna Loa or on Mauna Kea was feeding the springs that came out of Keokaha. And most of the water that came out of Keokaha was from Mauna Kea. So we know that we are connected to Mauna Kea's water. But her waters, you know, are much older than Oahu's waters because they have a lot more land to move through. The rock is less porous in some places. And so the science of understanding the water that comes out of your tap water in Honolulu is actually really complex, but it's still really cool to think of where did that water come from and how long did it come there? What did it see? Like, so some of this rain fell on King Kamehameha probably, you know, and it's still, we're drinking it today. Like it just was in the rainwater yesterday. That's very different than the rain I get in my catchment tank. That catchment water, you know, it's based on the water that fell on my house in the last couple of months. But the groundwater is older water. It's been trapped there for years. And it has a mo'olelo that comes along with it. And that's where it's fun, where science comes in, right? You can look at the isotopes in that water and it tells its story of where it comes from. And so that's where I love telling stories. And I feel like, you know, as we can tell modern day stories about these raindrops, so too can we understand some of these traditional stories and the knowledge that was encoded into it when it talks about these cycles, talks about connections and relationships to it. But the more you tell the story, the more people are related to these things. So the Red Hill is going to be a mo'olelo that people understand And now they'll really understand why people are worried about contamination of our aquifer. The first time I did the Huaka'i, the going into the shaft at Halawa and see the aquifer with my students, it was just amazing to know that if you wanted to do any harm to Honolulu, you know, that aquifer sitting right there. You put anything in that water and you will impact almost anybody in all of Honolulu. I mean, it's that simple. So the Board of Water Supply has an amazing kuleana to take care of that water, and they take it serious. And as you hear, you know, in their statements, they know how easy it is to impact these water sources. And that's because the water is all connected underground. There are different dikes that separate it. There are different catchment reservoirs, yet things are so much more connected than we think they are. And we as humans have made them more connected by tunneling and connecting water sources that weren't originally. So a lot of the water that you drink on in Honolulu side actually fell on Windward side, right? And we tunnel it over. We move water around for our needs. The agriculture did that in Hawaii Island, on Maui, Kauai, all of us, you know, we have these histories of moving water around for agriculture. And now they're doing it for developments. And so knowing that, you know, you might rely on your water on the Ko'olau side to feed your lo'i, yet most of that water is being diverted over to feed urban Honolulu. Those fights over water is what started a lot of the environmental movements in Hawaii back in the 70s and 80s. And it's just knowing that connection and knowing where your waters come from that help you understand, you know, where your place is in that story and what difference you're going to make in that story in the future. What is your kuleana going to be? As I said, I don't know if I got to choose mine because I think I was gifted it in my name that I needed to be connected to the vais that surrounded me. And so that kuleana is going to be mine. And I'm going to continue to connect people to their vai and to their kai and knowing who your waters are and where it comes from. So a lot of our introductions in Olal Hawaii, we talk about where our mauna is, where our vai is, where our kahawais are. And even in urban Honolulu, you can talk about where your rain come from. But I challenge you, find out where the water in your tap comes from. Is 20% of it, you know, coming from Halawa? Is 10% coming from the Punalu'u aquifer? Is 10% coming from, you know, where is your water coming from? And the Board of Water Supply does a great job of education, and they're always there to help. They do want people to understand their water because they understand that the more people are connected to vai, they understand their landscaping needs, you know, all your actions about water, it's going to be more and more important in the future. Maui has probably been the only county that has had it for the last few decades, where they're always on water restrictions and water shortages. And though the people of Maui have seen that, and Oahu's been sort of safeguarded for it, you know, they just keep trying to change and try not to have any shortages, because we know that scares away tourists or it scares away development. But it's going to become real because our water resources are being impacted by climate change, by the lessening of consistent rainfall, because when you have large water events, those usually aren't the best to recharge your aquifers, because those large water events just cause flooding. They cause erosion and they wash away. They don't really always percolate the aquifer the same way that a consistent rain does. We've had a lot of landscape changes as far as forest cover. Invasive species don't hold water. They don't capture water the same way native species do. So as our forests become invaded, as they change, as we lose forest cover, as we lose ground cover as far with vegetation, then we get less water recharge as well. So all these little different, not just climate change, but the different way we use our landscapes are allowing less recharge into our aquifers. They're not being filled up the way they used to. So all these are going to lead to more and more water concerns in Hawaii in the future. And we've been blessed so far. We think we have lots of rain, but we're using it faster than we're recharging it. And different places on Hawaii is worried about that. But, you know, we know there's untapped water underneath, but do we really want to tap water that's thousands of years old? I mean, just think about it. Do we want to be drinking the water that has been there for 1,000 years, that should be there for another 1,000 years. We need to understand that those things have their own function. And the more water we pump out, the more ocean water is going to start seeping into our wells. So there's a lot of water is going to be really important as we move into the next couple decades, but we each have a role in that. Our kuleana can be actualized. We make choices every day that make a difference for this aquifer going forward. And I hope everyone understands that pilina that they have to it. One way to do that is through the practice of kilo. And kilo is translated as observation of knowing something. But to really understand the practice of kilo, you need to observe something and understand how it related to the things around. And mostly it's the moon. So the moon cycle, the mahina, hina, regulates the movement of water. That's what the moon does. We know that mostly because of the tide she creates, right? When she's a full moon, she creates full tides because she's pulling that water toward her. So she has a huge pilina tavai, but she doesn't just pull the ocean tide. She pulls all the water within us. She pulls all the water in the trees. A hydroecologist, someone who studies the water that moves through plants, can tell you about how the water uptakes or the tree uptakes water differently based on the moon cycle. Some moon cycles, it's sucking in water. Other moon cycles, it's pushing it out so it leaves. The blood in our bodies, especially for Wahine, you know, it cycles on a monthly basis. All that things are connected to the moon. And so the practice of kilo is connecting the observations and things that are happening in the environment to the moon cycle. So you can see when things are budding and fruiting. You can see it on monthly terms. You can see it on annual terms. But the more you start understanding the relationship of how things change through time, how they're related to each other, as you make those connections, it's just the same way as you make human connections, right? You increase your family, you increase your friend circle. Every time you make pilina with someone, you become healthier. You grow from these relationships. And it's the same thing when you grow with these environmental relationships, these connections that you can have to aina. And all those little observations you make will help you have a better relationship with your aina. Start having you develop that aloha that you need for that aina so that the kuleana is given to you to take care of it. And you don't have to be Hawaiian, right, to go through this process. You have to be kanaka. You have to be a person and realize that you are part of this aina. You're a part of the people and the places here in Hawaii. And so it is all of our kuleana to take care of Hawaii, to take care of the water that falls, that cycles through us. Back to the story I shared in the beginning, when I asked the doctor, like, do I stop drinking the water? Should I buy like bottled water? Because, you know, I always just drink tap water. And he was like, it doesn't matter where you drink your water from. When you bathe, you're already infusing all of your body with that bath water. And so your body will adapt. And I did. It took me about 3 months for my body to stop having hives. But he said, yeah, you absorb more water in your body just by bathing and showering than you do by drinking sometimes. And so just think about that. You know, when you're bathing, you know, think of that story of where that water came from and how it's connected to you and who Kane was that brought that to you. The different akuas. So every akua has a different function. Every different rain type has a different name because it has a different function and it flows on our landscape differently and it came for a different reason. And as our climates change in Hawaii, as it's changing for the last 35 years, be a part of that change. It's easier to adapt if you're a part of a change than if it's something that just hits you that you weren't aware of or you weren't part of that story. It reminds me of Poliahu. There is Poliahu. She's present today on the top of Mauna Wakea. She's so beautiful, but she's, you know, half the size she used to be when I was a kid. And so what happens when Poliahu's no longer there? We can keep her stories alive, but will we really know who she is if we don't see her ourselves and see her presence? And so knowing our akua, knowing their stories, when they should have been there. Poliahu used to visit Hualalai frequently. When the first explorers came in 1700s, their journals talked about how Hualalai was covered in snow for much part of the year. I don't think I've ever seen snow on Hualalai myself, you know? So now Poliahu is restricted in her range. But these stories tell us about past weather, past climate, and they talk to us about our future. And it helps us connect to really understand what climate change means for Hawaii. And not to just think about it as just a science thing, or the scientists say this, and the scientists are going to tell us this, but being a part of these processes. These things are real. These stories are real. But we don't need to be afraid of it. We can be a part of those stories. We need to adapt to them. We need to live them. We need to feel them, because then we will know Hawaii and we'll also have a little better need to protect it in the future. And if we each have that need, which turns into love and turns into aloha, if we eat aloha aina the way our kupuna did, the way our ancestors did, then we're going to make sure Hawaii becomes healthy again. Because that's what makes people excited, right? Is love. Everyone wants to love something. So go find something that's yours to love, that you're going to malama, that you're going to ensure is successful. And if each one of us did that, we wouldn't have any problems. And you don't have to be a scientist to do that, right? You can love it in your way, in your art way, in your descriptive ways, whatever way it is. Find a way that you can share your love of these places and have that love make sure it's healthy.
You know, this platform, this podcast is meant to be able to provide space for shape-shifting and stories that are being asked to come forth in these times. Your embodiment and sharing is just profound and really inspiring and really rooting to practicality as well as the importance of the sacred and our relationship within that. And I just really appreciate your ability to express in that way, because it allows us that are continually wanting to move into these spaces to just sit a little bit deeper with that ability to practice in that way. So I really mahalo you for that. And maybe just to close it out, I'll ask you, you know, kind of shared already, but what is a kahea you would like to call out on this platform for our listeners? You've shared so much already, but if there's any last large message or kahea that we can really take action in immediately, or maybe for the longer term, what would that
be? Thanks for the question. I love always when people say, so what are we going to do about it? What are our choices? And I feel like we have kind of two main choices, and one might be a little harder than the other. The hardest one is to aloha the aina the way you would aloha your grandmother. So how are you going to find a tutu out there that you're going to love and that you're going to make sure is healthy? And she might pass away, she might move on, but you're going to do everything you can while she's here. So what are you going to do? What are you going to choose? A plant? Are you going to choose a space? What are you going to choose? The second kahe is related to that. But as I was saying, I love to tell stories because I think stories connect us to places and people. Whose stories are you going to listen to? There are so many people out there that have amazing stories to tell, an amazing ike to share. And this is our time right now to hear them. I don't understand demographics too well, but I'm pretty sure right now we have an amazing source of people that have been working in our environment, in all of our landscapes for decades, and their stories need to be heard. They need to be told. So go find someone and listen to them. If you want to know more about a specific kai, if you want to learn more about a surf spot, take that initiative to go and listen to someone's story about it. Ask them. They love telling stories. Everyone wants to tell their story. And the more stories we hear, you know, they're going to impact you in different ways. But there's so much we can learn from each other. And just being there for other people's stories. Go and volunteer. We always talk about all these amazing groups that are doing great aloha aina work, great conservation work. Well, they still need people. They still need your help. So don't just assume someone else is doing that job. Go ahead and ask. Go ahead and volunteer. My kids, I know I had to drag them for so many years, but every time I take them to someplace new, they have a story to tell. And now they can say that they've been to almost all the most amazing places in Hawaii Island just because we volunteer there, right? Just because we show up on a Saturday or we show up on a Thursday, or I take my students and I drag my keiki along. So take a friend with you. Take a friend with you and go volunteer. Take a friend with you and go listen to someone's story. Just build those relationships, that pilina to people and place. Because that's what makes Hawaii special, is the pilina we have for each other and that kuleana we have for each other. And if we do that, then we will become ku'oko, we'll become independent, we'll become healthy and resilient to outside forces if we have each other. And we are the ones that can build each other stronger through aloha. So aloha, everyone. Mahalo for hearing our stories. And I look forward to hearing your stories in the future.
Oh, mahalo nui, nui lani. It's been an absolute gift to be able to sit with you and just listen and be able to provide space for these stories to get out into the world. And that's one of the beautiful things about modern technology too, is that this is, will hopefully span the world as our vibe does. So mahalo.
Mahalo nui for making time to listen in to this conversation. We hope it resonated, filled you with curiosity and aloha for the place you call home in Hawaii Nei. Next up for our podcast, we have Sean Connolly, a beloved friend, incredible scholar, activist, artist, and educator, whose work has been dedicated to using ancestral knowledge of place as a tool for redesigning our futures centered in aloha aina. Till then, stay tuned and stay rooted, ohana.